Conor Pope, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Ray. Now, I have to say, if you'd asked me an hour ago that you were going to play a song to open your show that had the word heart in it and wasn't Bonnie Tyler, I would have said, no, you're mad. He's definitely going to play Bonnie Tyler. Everyone's going to play Bonnie Tyler, but no.
Well, you
the Pet Shop Boys.
Louise Duffy played Total Eclipse of the Heart.
There's plenty of room for two Total Eclipses of the Heart in the same day.
There are.
I love the tune. You know that?
It's a guilty pleasure. It's hard to beat.
A couple of years ago, I went to Electric Picnic, and she was performing on, I think, the Electric Ireland throwback stage,
right.
And I swear to God, it was one of the best performances I've ever seen at Electric Picnic. And you're surrounded by all these cool bands being cool, but Bonnie Tyler singing Total Eclipse of the Heart.
And then she's holding out for a hero.
Not so good. Don't love that as much.
Lost in France.
What?
I think that was Billy. Was that her?
Lost in France. You've lost me.
Right. Pricewatch@rte.ie. Pricewatch@rte.ie. Now, we were speaking to Billy there. Billy, who was in sharing his story of cystic fibrosis, and he was sharing at the very end, telling us about the fact that he can't get a mortgage because of his cystic fibrosis. And that must be quite common.
Yeah, no. Now it seems incredibly unfair because I think an awful lot of the time financial institutions just look at the kind of the actuarial numbers and they look at the stats and they don't look at the human beings behind the numbers. And, you know, he was saying he's 38 now and, you know, he can't get a mortgage because of his health concerns. But sure, like, nobody knows what's around the corner. So, you know, a bank can give somebody a mortgage today and they can drop dead tomorrow. And, you know, the bank will be stung for it. So there has to be, there should be some kind of government-backed safety net for people who are in that position or indeed who have other life-limiting medical conditions, whatever they might be.
Well, I was reading an article in your paper over the weekend of a lady who's been diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
And her hopes of getting the mortgage gone.
Exactly. So not only are you dealing with this, in that woman's instance, this devastating diagnosis, also these dreams that you have of building a home for yourself or your family is just taken away from you. And we have to live in a better world than that. So if somebody has the capacity to repay, and if somebody has a good job, and if somebody if they can afford a mortgage, well, then I think there should be some way of underwriting those mortgages for the people who need it. And I'm sure that we live in a society where people would be willing to, you know, create that kind of social solidarity and that safety net for people, because that's what we need. You know, it's all well and good to say, oh, well, you know, the numbers don't look good for X, Y and Z, so we're not going to support those people. When in fact, those people are probably the people who need as much, if not more support than most people.
Isn't that how we should be judged, how we treat our most vulnerable?
Absolutely. Now, I mean, there are lots of other reasons why a bank might decline you for a mortgage. I mean, if your income isn't sufficiently high, or if you don't have the big enough deposit, or if you have a poor credit history, or if you've got an online gambling account, or if they look at your finances. And I won't fault the banks on that level, because in times past, like in the Celtic Tiger era, like, they were just throwing money at people. They were just giving money to people. Oh, would you like 110% mortgage so you can buy yourself something pretty after you've got your house, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
They were just being incredibly reckless. So there was going to be the flip side of that. And now they are much more rigorous, and they will go through your bank statement and they'll say, well, what were you doing spending money in X chipper at 2 o'clock in the morning, four nights a week, or whatever it might be. And it's right that they look at your accounts properly, but there has to be exceptions and there has to be support for people who need that support. And it just seems like common sense to me.
Yeah, it seems like something that somebody should advocate for. And I'm going to do a little bit more research around it, because I was fascinated by Billy's story. And as you say, all of that, like the hand that life has dealt you, and then on top of it, you can't get a mortgage.
Yeah.
Okay, this came into pricewatch@rte.ie. Ray, Connor, I keep getting messages from Revolut asking for my PPS number and have yet to respond because of all the talk of fraud and scams. I wonder, are the requests legitimate and why do they need my tax details?
This is a very good question. And I think one of the problems we have nowadays is that constantly I'm on this show or I'm on, you know, and we're talking about scams and don't respond to text messages and be very wary of any kind of correspondence you get that seems kind of out of the ordinary. And then on the other hand, you have a financial institution like Revolut sending people messages going, you need to update your financial details and can we have your PPS number? So I suppose the question is, why do they want the PPS number, and is it in fact a legitimate request? Now, this person says that why do they need the tax details? Now, your PPS number isn't just your tax details. I mean, a lot of people will think it's just to do with tax. It's actually if you want to apply for a driver's license or provision of health and education services and social welfare payments and lots of other things.
Is it unique Is it a unique identifier of you as an Irish person?
Exactly. Within a week of you being born,
right,
you've been given a PPS number, and then anybody who's more a recent arrival in the country will get a PPS number, and it is used across multiple areas. So it's used by the Department of Social Protection, it's used by health insurance providers, and it's also used by financial institutions. So a lot of the time, banks will look for your PPS number if you're borrowing money. Okay, or if and they will do that for tax reasons, and they will do that for all sorts of other reasons. But when you're opening a current account, there's a lot of ambiguity out there. So, for instance, Revolut is a European bank, and it says it looks for the tax number of its customers to determine where they are tax resident. And that's important, you know. And on the website, it says Revolut as a financial institution is required by law to collect and report information on your tax residencies. This is regulated by international standards, specifically the Common Reporting Standard and FATCA, which is the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, which is an American law. Right. So they have to adhere to legislation across in multiple jurisdictions. OK, now, AIB, for instance, for its part, it sets out on its website that it asks for PPS numbers when you're opening a current account, and it also looks for your number when you're opening a deposit account. But Bank of Ireland doesn't look for a PPS number when you're opening a current account, and it only looks for it if you're looking for an overdraft of greater than 500 euros. And then when you go to the central bank, they say they don't have a prescriptive rule. So the central bank, as the regulator, doesn't say all banks must ask for your PPS number.
So it's vague, it's vague.
What they say is they must ask for the appropriate documentation.
Just before we go on, just Revolut's status as a bank within Ireland changed over the last couple of years, didn't it?
It was granted a banking license.
Aha.
So it now has, it's a full bank in this country.
Now, if you have a Revolut account that's over 3 or 4 years old, were you asked for your PPSN?
That's probably what's happening here, because when you signed up, if you signed up a few years back, you mightn't have been asked for the PPS number. But the laws and the rules, as it perceives them to be, have changed. And as a result, it is routinely asking for people, asking for their details. So it is a legitimate request. That's the first thing.
But just so people know, so if you're opening an account with Revolut, you will have to provide your PPS.
Now.
And what they're doing now, and they're not making it prescriptive, they're asking you for your PPS if you have an existing account.
Exactly.
Can skip it.
Yeah, but for instance, I have a Revolut account and I was given a 90-day period in which to update my details. And if I don't update my details, my account will be restricted.
Right.
And so they want to have that information on file, and they're perfectly within the rights to have that information on file. What I would say to somebody is be very careful about how you submit the information. Because the old rule about don't respond to text messages, so if don't just send it via text or only do it via the Revolut app, because that way you can be sure that what you're doing is you're doing it on their platform and you're not doing it on a third party platform. So don't follow a link and input the details in that way. And that's not what Revolut is asking you to do. Mm. But go onto the Revolut website or go onto the Revolut app yourself and input the details via the app, because that way you're protecting yourself. But no matter what happens or no matter how the information is sought, don't follow a link that's embedded in a text message.
Why isn't there uniformity across all the banks on this?
Well, I guess because it's a complex sector. And without wanting to be I'm just playing devil's advocate. I mean, it is a hideously complicated area because there's multiple different strands to it. Some banks are pillar banks and they've been in the country for more than 150 years. Some banks have been in the country for less than 15 years. Some banks have employees who do this and employees who do that. And other banks have different classes of employees. It's just a very complicated area. Yeah. So what they will all do is they will all follow the rules laid down by the central bank. But again, the central bank doesn't want to be too prescriptive in the rules that it lays down. It just wants to be sure that the person who opens an account is the person who they say they are. Because obviously there's a danger of criminality and money laundering.
Can I tell you that just before we leave, that I was my daughter was opening an account.
Go on.
Yeah, and she went on a video call. And I was beside her, helping her out. And next thing I spoke, and the person said, "Who's that?"
Yeah.
And I said, "I'm her dad." And the person said, "You'll have to leave the room."
What? Because your daughter's under 18, right?
Yeah. And she said, "No, you'll have to leave the room." And I said, "What? I don't know her father. I have no proof."
Yeah.
So I had to go up and leave the room.
But how did she even know you'd left the room?
That's a good question. Why did she hear the door closing?
Let's say if you were a criminal, you could have just moved to the side.
Well, I wasn't on camera even. I just spoke. Anyway, it's a mad world out there. Pricewatch at RTE.ie. If you want Conor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. Conor, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.